南無妙法蓮華経。南無妙法蓮華経。Namo Myo Renge Kyo. Hi, everyone. We are about to start the penultimate chapter of the Lankavatara. That is the penultimate chapter as far as the integral Lankavatara. There's a final chapter, an additional chapter that has a... What is it called? It's just a verse section, and it seems to be kind of ad hoc put together, may have been added to the Lankavatara at a later stage. Not sure on the origins, but it's a little confused. But there's a lot of important things in it, so we will read the Sagathakam. Sagathakam. Not sure how it's pronounced. But lots of notes in the column, so that will be interesting. Right now, Chapter 8. Thanks for being here. Thanks for your practice, for being Buddhist, helping to change the mental temperature of the world. You are much needed today. And of course, we practice for our own sanity and value creation and experience of our maximal potential of our life, right? Don't want to miss any of it. We only have this one. But as we've said many times, as we develop ourselves, so too does our environment develop, influence, changes, right? And just should be proud of your practice. It's a big, big thing. Not just for yourself, but your environment is yourself. So it can't escape your influence. Chapter 8. At that time, Mahamari, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva, asked the Emancipated One in verse and again made a request saying, so now he's taking on the verse, please tell me, Tathagata, fully enlightened one, regarding the merit and vice of meat eating. Oh God, this old saw. Boy, talk about that's a deeply Hinayana thing, right? When in the early teachings, early time periods of Shakyamuni's earlier teachings, he was trying to get people, his students, to understand the nature of how the mind works and how the mind vis-a-vis the body works, and how the two are interconnected wasn't a common way to talk about our existence 3,000 years ago. And so, there were a lot of the early teachings involved following rules. The rules were steeped in privations, right? No sex, no meat, no socializing, don't ever smile at a woman, don't invite. I mean, just insane amounts of rules, all not because this is the way to practice Buddhism, but because this is things that those people at that time needed to understand about how their mind and body is an integral unit, that they're not just victims of life with the gods tearing them asunder and saying, you are this and will always be this, and all the magical and mystical thoughts about life, right? The concept of, even in the arts, The concept of that life breath was seen in the curvature. You ever look at old Indian art? It's like the shoulders are really weird. They have this curve. There were manuals that said if you draw a human being or sculpt a human being, the shoulders should have the curve of an elephant's trunk. They had all these things they drew from sources for the rules of drawing a human figure. Had rules for everything, right? So being human back then was really an exercise in conformity. It's like you had very little agency for your own life. So the idea that you could actually control your sexual urges, your appetite, your avarice for sweets, all these things, Shakyamuni could identify as, boy, if you have to really control yourself from or remove yourself from circulation in the general populace and deal with being, you're going to discover a lot of things about the nature of your body, your mind, your karma, right? The imperatives that seem to be built into your existence, you need to see them and see that they're not indelible, right? This is on the path to understanding impermanence, that things change, that you can control that change. These are revolutionary thinking at the time, right? When you've got the Brahmin class coming to your home on a special occasion, special because it would take a long time to get them to come and talk to your family, and they would dole out, okay, this is your karma. You're going to be a shoe cobbler because your dad was a shoe cobbler, the caste system. You will have this many children. You will marry this person. This still goes on today. Arranged marriages and relationships, a tremendous amount of control exerted on you, the lowly human servile thing. So, you know, you got to realize Shakyamuni was quite revolutionary. He pissed off a lot of people who were enjoying being the controllers, yes? So the early teachings are filled with this kind of get to know your mind and body and appreciate that you can alter your own life. Really? Right? So that's where this comes from. This is old stuff. It's really kind of surprising to see it in the Lankavatara, yeah? Which is an early Mahayana teaching. You would think by then that stuff had been done away, but here's Mahamati dragging this along. Again, Mahamati is not just this one person. Mahamati represents, not like an elected official, well, they don't represent anything but themselves anymore, but he's a personage that identifies the entire breadth of Buddhist students, Shakyamuni students. And so some of them are more developed than others. Even though the format is Bodhisattva Mahasattva, he's still speaking directly to the Hinayanists because the Mahamati is representing their questions as well, the Shravakas, the Pratyekabuddhas, so on and so forth. So this question, what about eating meat? Okay, regarding the merit and vice of eating, meat eating, thereby I and other Bodhisattva Mahasattvas of the present and future may teach the Dharma to make those beings abandon their greed for meat, who, under the influence of habit energy belonging to the carnivorous existence, strongly crave meat food. It's about cravings in a very physical sense, But still, craving happens in the mind, right? The whole reason this was an issue early on. These meat eaters, thus, abandoning their desire for its taste, will seek the Dharma for their food and enjoyment, and regarding all beings with love as if they were an only child, will cherish great compassion towards them. You see how that slipped into a human child versus eating, you know, McDonald's? I point out McDonald's because there was a great uproar back in the early 2000s. Might have been before that, actually, 1990s. Where McDonald's had opened opened shop in India. It was very newsworthy because known as a vegetarian country, for the most part, not all, but for the most part, to open a burger joint was amazing. But they were selling vegetarian burgers. Remember that whole fad, right? There's still a lot of people live it, but for McDonald's to say every corporate fast food joint had some version of a veggie burger, yeah? And then they had them without buns, just the lettuce instead of buns. It's craziness. Anyway, issue was that, you know, those famous McDonald's French fries. Well, it was headlines when they discovered in India that those wonderful French fries were actually flavored using tallow, which, if you're not sure what that is, it's beef fat. That's that extra special taste of the McDonald's French fries, the beef fat. Yikes. That was huge. All right. Cherishing great compassion, they will discipline themselves at the stages of bodhisattvahood and will quickly be awakened in supreme enlightenment if they just don't eat burgers anymore, right? Or staying a while at the stage of shravakahood and pratyekabuddhahood, they will finally reach the highest stage of tathagatahood if they could only stop eating meat, you know? Emancipated one. Even those philosophers who hold erroneous doctrines and are addicted to the views of the Lokayata, such as the dualism of being and non-being, nihilism, eternalism, will prohibit meat eating and will themselves refrain from eating it. How much more, O world leader, he who promotes one taste for mercy and is the fully enlightened one, why not prohibit in his teachings the eating of flesh, not only by himself, but by others? Interesting. Very interesting point. Something I've pointed out several times in other videos, to the chagrin and the rather polemic response from some who think I'm full of shit when I say that Shakyamuni never prohibited forever the eating of meat. That wasn't the exercise. The exercise was to prohibit yourself eating meat to understand the nature of your cravings, yeah? And the compassion one would develop for meat in this case, but the compassion was the important part, that we should see everything in our environment as though it was our only child. If you treated everyone you meet today, the next day, every day, as though they were your only child, depends on your parenting karma, I suppose, but wouldn't you address them, have a sympathy, a compassion for them that you wouldn't otherwise have? The lesson was the compassion and seeing how integrated our behavior is when we deal with others. Yes, it was an actual privation. Yes, of course. But it was a teaching tool. This is something that's often missed when people study or read sutras uninitiated, right? Indeed, the emancipated one, who at heart is filled with pity for the entire world, who regards all beings as his only child, and who possesses great compassion in compliance with his sympathetic feelings, teach us as to the merit and vice of meat eating, so that I and the other Bodhisattva Mahasattvas may teach the Dharma. So Mahamati is actually complaining that at this stage of the Lankavatara, Shakyamuni is not making a big deal about meat eating anymore. Why don't you come out as that being a major thing? Why wouldn't you? Why don't you? Tell us more about that so that we can be practicing correctly with the right attitude. All right. So, of course, Shakyamuni complies. And he says to him, "For innumerable reasons, Mahamati, the bodhisattva whose nature is compassion is not to eat any meat. I will explain them, the many reasons, Mahamati." Again, understand, this is a teaching to understand compassion. And the state of things in India 3,000 years ago was very agrarian, right? And so to be a vegetarian was almost more political. It was a cultural reality, but it was influenced by tremendous forces outside of, before Buddhism, right? In this long course of transmigration here, there is not a living being that, having assumed the form of a living being, has not been your mother or father or brother or sister or son or daughter or the one or the other in various degrees of kinship, and when acquiring another form of life may live as a beast, as a domestic animal, as a bird, or as a womb-born, or as something standing in some relationship to you. This being so, how can the Bodhisattva Mahasattva, who desires to approach all beings as if they were himself and to practice the Buddha truths, eat the flesh of any living being that is of the same nature as himself? I have had many translations about this issue, and I would have to say that this translation, Mr. Suzuki, it has far too much of a literal tone. It doesn't even sound like Shakyamuni. This sounds like a vegan political statement, right? It's not the rhetoric that we're accustomed to hearing from Shakyamuni. Even Mahamati, the Rakshasa, listening to the Tathagata's discourse on the highest essence of the Dharma, attained the notion of protecting Buddhism and feeling pity, refrains from eating flesh. How much more should those who love the Dharma? Thus, Mahamati, wherever there is the evolution of living beings, let people cherish the thought of kinship with them, and thinking that all beings are to be loved as they were as an only child, let them refrain from eating meat. Now, there's a little different way of saying it in that sentence that I think is closer to Shakyamuni's intent. Wherever there is the evolution of living beings, let people cherish the thought of kinship with them. This is not the malarkey about reincarnation. Just get that out of your mind. That's not Buddhism. What, again, Buddhism is about the mind. So everything Shakyamuni teaches is very much about introspection. Know what it is that you're doing at every moment of your doing it, because that's karma. And if you're to experience this life fully, then you need to identify everything that you're doing, every action you're taking, as whether or not you're supporting that activity of full manifestation, or if you're creating obstacles to it. So the formation of living beings is built into the universe from time without beginning. He has indicated this throughout the book. Now, the fact that it's not pulled out in this translation at this moment about meat, see, that's an influence from Suzuki and the translators, and there's a desperate clinging of vegetarians to justify vegetarianism in Buddhism, as though that is the philosophy whereby you are repulsed by eating meat. Now, if you're a vegetarian, good on you. But I don't have a problem with vegans or vegetarians or paleo or any diet, because our life expression, it isn't about that. Buddhism is about attitude and intent, right? And if you see the people around you with the idea that if you're struggling with them or dislike them or hate them, and you're conceiving of them as, man, I can make meatballs out of you this and that. Right? There's a disdain, a profound hatred. It's counter to embracing. Would you do that with your only child? Not unless you were psychologically very screwed up, right? We're not naturally cannibals. Although we can be. There's stories of great tragedies of, you know, lost aircraft in the hills, and where people have been isolated and in danger of dying or freezing or malnourished, where they end up picking somebody who's not doing so well and making them a food source. I mean, there's a long history of this happening. I'm not justifying cannibalism again, but I am saying that what Shakyamuni is talking about is attitude, right? He's not talking about imperatives in the sense of human behavior in samsara. He's talking about imperatives, if you will, that are mental in nature, attitudes. So when he says, wherever there's the evolution of human beings or living beings, if you're going to practice every moment of your life in homage to this great process of life making, then everything that's part of that process, you need to regard, you don't need to, you will develop a regard of great respect, admiration, compassion. And if you're compassionate about life, then what is produced by life has a value, right, beyond destroying it. It's like a discussion about murder or taking a life. What attitude, what intent, what kind of mindset does that require? And that's what Shakyamuni is addressing, is that mindset. Thus, Mahamati, wherever there is the evolution of living beings, let people cherish the thought of kinship with them. All right? So with Bodhisattva, whose nature is compassion, meat is to be avoided by him. Avoided. But he may have to eat meat as a matter of survival. It's not that he can't eat meat, it's that it would be a good cause to avoid it. If given an option, take the option. Right? Even in exceptional cases, it is not compassionate of a bodhisattva of good standing to eat meat. The flesh of a dog, an ass, a buffalo, a horse, a bull, or a man, or any other being, Mahamati, is not generally eaten by people. Generally eaten by people. He didn't say must not. Is sold on the roadside as mutton for the sake of money, and therefore Mahamati, the bodhisattva, should not eat meat. Ah, this points to something that we talked about in my videos on the Noble Eightfold Path. How to live one's life. One shouldn't be, in the Eightfold Path, you might recall, or you may want to go watch it, there are admonitions against being a merchant, for instance, opening a store up to sell weapons of violence, guns. Right? Does that mean that all Buddhists should run around and melt every gun they find? No. It's that if your endeavor in life is attached to the facilitating of taking a life, then that is affecting the way you live your life. Right? The influence is on our attitude. And so we must take care, or as he says, cherish the thought about life affirming at every moment. So do we want to, for instance, if it's not guns, promote war or promote any kind of behavior that questions the value of life should be a primary concern to a Buddhist, period. For the sake of love of purity, Mahamati, the bodhisattva should refrain from eating flesh, which is born of semen, blood, etc. See how visceral he's getting? For fear of causing terror to living beings, Mahamati, let the bodhisattva who is disciplining himself to attain compassion refrain from eating flesh. Refrain. And what's very important, and this is a flashback to the Eightfold Noble Path, for fear of causing terror to living beings. Ah, you see the attitude and intent? I keep pulling that out. So if you're compassionate towards somebody, you're being a bodhisattva, you're enabling them to discover their own practice, right? And suddenly you dive into a nice rare steak with blood squirting out of it in front of them. Whether they're meat eaters or not, there's a certain animal behavior going on there that can be off-putting. Even if they don't express it to another person, they see you as a carnivore, a meat eater. And in India at that time, that was quite a charismatic act. To this day, Indians think of themselves as long successions of incarnations of birds, bulls, relatives. Their dog may be an ant from three lifetimes ago. It's such mystical, magical nonsense, but it's very much a part of their culture. And this is what Shakyamuni is addressing, is that if you, here and now in India, choose to eat meat, you're going to scare the bejesus out of everybody around you. They'll stay away from you. Oh, they stay away from you, that disables your bodhisattva ability, your ability to raise their consciousnesses. Because they will see you as a frightening thing. And so they're not going to listen to you. They're not even going to show up to your discussions on Buddhism. Do you see where this is directed now? When a dog sees, even from a distance, a hunter, a pariah, a fisherman, etc., whose desires are for meat eating, he is terrified with fear, thinking, they are death dealers, and they will even kill me. In the same way, Mahamati, even those minute animals that are living in the air, insects, on earth and in water, seeing meat eaters are at a distance, will perceive them by their keen sense of smell, the odor of the rakshasa, and will run away from such people as quickly as possible, for they are to them the threat of death. And certainly, in India, to this day, this would be prevalent. Meat eating would be seen as an affront to life. But we don't live in India. Many Indians do today. Like I brought up my example of McDonald's. It still created a big uproar. Because that's their cultural understanding. But as Buddhists, it's up to us to be sensitive to it. That's what the prohibition about meat is in Buddhism. It's not that you can't eat it. It's that you should be aware of your surroundings and those who might see you and perceive you in a negative light because you're eating meat, which ergo prohibits you from influencing their lives toward Buddhism. That's the whole thing. For this reason, Mahamati, let the Bodhisattva who is disciplining himself to abide in great compassion because of its terrifying living beings refrain from eating meat. Not because you're a murderer, not because eating flesh is a vile thing, but because it can be perceived by others to be a frightening thing and therefore diminish your capacity to do the Bodhisattva work. Always, always, this is the point. Again, I'm not diminishing your practice if you like being a vegan or a vegetarian or anything in that ilk. Let's just say not eating meat. You understand, right? It's about perception, attitude, intent, perception. If you're a compassionate being, then you must consider the other, your environment. It's always this in Buddhism. In order to guard the minds of all people, Mahamati, let the Bodhisattva whose nature is exalted and who is desirous of avoiding censure on the teachings of the Buddha, what I was just saying, refrain from eating meat. Now, in America, or North America, or South America, Brazil, big meat-eating culture, yeah? So, if you were down there spreading Buddhism to Brazilians, and they invited you over for a meal and served up meat, of course you would eat it. You would be honoring their culture. They wouldn't be afraid of you because you ate meat. In fact, if you denied that meat, said, I'll just have the mashed potatoes. You guys can eat the meat. It would be creating a distance between you and them, not unlike the distance he's talking about in India. The complete reverse. You have to be awake, sensitive, and compassionate to your environs. That's the message. For instance, Mahamati, there are some in the world who speak ill of the teachings of the Buddha. They would say, why are those who are living the life of a Sramana or a Brahmin reject such food as was enjoyed by the ancient rishis, and like the carnivorous animals living in the air, earth, or water? Why do they go wandering about the world, thoroughly terrifying lying beings, discarding the life of the Sramana and destroying the vow of the Brahmin? There is no dharma, no discipline in them. People would say this of Buddhists, yeah? There are many such adverse-minded people who thus speak ill of the teachings of the Buddha. For this reason, Mahamati, in order to guard the minds of all people, let the bodhisattva whose nature is full of pity and who is desirous of avoiding censure on the teaching of the Buddha refrain from eating meat. A very big issue in this Hindu multiplicity of religious deities and gods and cultures that have all manner of worship of animals and reincarnation and all this mythology that is really ingrained in them. Have some compassion for them and don't be seen eating meat around them. It will break their connection with you. They will put you in a box mentally and you won't be able to reach them. Do you see? Mahamati, when sons or daughters of good family wishing to exercise themselves in various disciplines such as the attainment of a compassionate heart, the holding a magical formula, or the perfecting of magical knowledge, or starting on a pilgrimage to the Mahayana, retire into a cemetery or into the wilderness or a forest where demons gather or frequently approach, or when they attempt to sit on a couch or seat for the exercise, they are hindered because of their meat eating from gaining magical powers or from obtaining emancipation. That's total bullshit. When have you ever heard Shakyamuni, Nichiren, Tendai, any Buddhist scholar start talking about magic? This is Suzuki taking a flight of fancy in here and translating at will his own predilections about this subject. This is so not Shakyamuni talking right now. Mahamati, seeing that thus there are obstacles to accomplishing of all the practices, let the bodhisattva who is desirous of benefiting himself as well as others totally refrain from eating meat. Again, the same, that sounds more in keeping with Shakyamuni. You're surrounded by people whose entire culture, life, for generations, has been built on this mysticism and magic about living beings, organisms, and so forth. But, you know, if you're a logical person, that would also include all of the various life forms in water that we drink, and we must drink water. Why do we clean ourselves? Why do we go in water and bathe ourselves? We're killing and drowning the bacteria that's on our body. How heinous. We're murderers. I mean, you can, and I say this not to be individually a jerk, but Buddhism is the vehicle for that ridiculous argument, to take things to the nth degree. So what I want you to understand about this isn't about meat eating. This is about doing some behavior that is normal, quote unquote, But being sensitive to our environment being the culture, the population, our friends, our students, our co-practitioners, being sensitive to their cultural awareness, their own. Everyone's in a state of development in Buddhism, just as you and I are. And being tolerant is one thing. Being ignorant is something else. So before I sit down and eat meat with you, I will feel confident that you are a meat eater. If I know, and believe me, when somebody's a vegetarian, it doesn't take long before they make it known that they're a vegetarian. And so rather than as a typical Westerner saying, I know you're a vegetarian, where can I go eat a steak where you can get, they have good salad, they have a great salad bar, would that be okay for you? And then we'll go, no, what Shakyamuni is saying is be more respectful than you need to be. Be more sensitive, because if this other person has committed themselves to a lifestyle of vegetarianism, then you should treat them like they were your only child. And if they're your only child, you're kind of going to bend your own habits just out of deference, out of respect for your only child's decision. Now, maybe not. Maybe you're an authoritarian. You'll say, well, you should taste some of this meat while you're eating your salad, dummy. Well, that's not very Buddhist, is it? But if it's our only child, then we'd say, oh, okay, well, let's go have a vegan turkey, right? I'll enjoy that with you. I'll change my desires and habits to be more in line with you, so you can understand how much I want to be in your life, how much I want to share your life with you. Compassion, you see? Meat comes up a lot because we're meat eaters. But in India, there's a very hardcore dividing line between those who do and those who don't, yeah? So respect others. It's not just about meat. As even the sight of objective forms gives rise to the desire for tasting their delicious flavor, let the bodhisattva whose nature is pity and who regards all beings as his only child wholly refrain from eating meat. Now, my point is in that sentence, even the sight of meat gives rise to the desire for tasting their delicious flavor. He didn't say just taste for meat. He's saying the delicious flavor of meat. How the hell does he know it's delicious if he hasn't partaken himself? Which now is actually answering Mahamati's more direct question, is why don't you talk about it anymore? Because it's not about meat specifically. It's about the perception of a meat eater to those who refrain from it. Respect for one's environment. Recognizing that his mouth smells most obnoxiously, even when living this life, let the bodhisattva whose nature is pity wholly refrain from eating meat. Now he's saying that, you know, to people who don't eat meat and are sensitive about that, it's like, you know, this whole thing over the last couple of decades of not smoking cigarettes. Have you ever had somebody come into your home or at work? You have a conversation with somebody, and the minute they open their mouth, oh, In fact, they don't even have to open their mouth. You smell it in their clothes. Don't you recoil a bit? Oh, cigarette smoke. Hmm? Especially if you're a non-smoker, of course. Smokers, they'll smell it. They'll be aware of it too, but they're not as sensitive to it. The same thing with meat. Or garlic. There are prohibitions about eating garlic in Buddhism. Oh, you didn't know that? Oh, yeah. Any strong onions. Because you give off foul breath, and that could turn somebody off, and you miss the opportunity to guide them toward their Buddhist practice. Over and over and over again, that's the point. Not that you can't eat onions. The meat eater sleeps uneasily and when awakened is distressed. He dreams of dreadful events which makes his hair rise on end. He is left alone in an empty hut. He leads a solitary life and his spirit is seized by demons. Frequently he is struck with terror. He trembles without knowing why. There is no regularity in his eating. He is never satisfied in his eating. He never knows what is meant by proper taste, digestion, and nourishment. His visceras are filled with worms and other impure creatures and harbor the cause of leprosy. Oh my God. Oh my gosh. There's no way that's Shakyamuni. Unless he's creating this dream like how one might be perceived by those devout vegans. For them it's a religion. So they would perceive you, the meat eater. This is why they would be reviled by you, right? Because they would see you as this messed up vision here. Leprosy. Oh, my goodness. I don't think I would have translated that at all, Suzuki. I would have left it out. It's such crap. In eating, he never knows what's a proper taste. He ceases to entertain any thoughts of aversion towards all diseases. Yeah, because, you know, when we eat meat, we want cancer. Come on. It's ridiculous. When I teach to regard food as if it were eating the flesh of one's own child or taking a drug, how can I permit my disciples, Mahamati, to eat food consisting of flesh and blood, which is gratifying to the unwise, but is abhorred by the wise, which brings many evils and keeps away many merits, and which was not offered to the rishis and is altogether unsuitable. Again, this is a cultural, almost political statement. We live in India. We live in a nation where everyone is a vegetarian or vegan who's religious about it, and they have horrible visions because they've demonized meat eaters and deified flesh and blood. And so this is why you must stay away from meat. Not because it makes you a non-Buddhist or a bad Buddhist, but because look at where you are. Now, Mahamati, the food I have permitted my disciples to take is gratifying to all wise people, but is avoided by the unwise. It is productive. What? The food I have permitted my disciples to eat is gratifying to all the wise. Okay. But is avoided by the unwise. See, again, this translation is a mess. Okay, I promote that you eat, you know, salad, carrots, gruel, rice. But the unwise, they don't like it. Well, you just spent all this time telling me how the unwise would be non-Buddhists or ignorant Buddhists. And so if they're vegan or vegetarian, and everything you're promoting that your disciples eat is not meat, then how is it that they would? It makes no sense. It is productive of many merits, it keeps away many evils, and it has been prescribed by an ancient rishi. It comprises rice, barley, wheat, kidney beans, lentils, etc., clarified butter, oil. Where's butter come from, by the way? Dairy. Isn't dairy a product of flesh and blood animals? Right? How far are you willing to go? Honey, molasses, treacle, I don't know what that is, sugar cane, coarse sugar, etc. Food prepared with these is proper food. Mahamani, there may be some irrational people in the future who will discriminate and establish new rules of moral discipline, and who, under the influence of the habit energy belonging to the carnivorous races, will greedily desire the taste of meat. It is not for those people that the above food is prescribed. Wham! Exactly the point I've been making over and over and over. They're different cultures. Mahamati, this is the food I urge for the Bodhisattva Mahasattvas who have made offerings to the previous Buddhas, who have planted roots of goodness, and who are possessed of resolve, devoid of discrimination, who are all men and women belonging to the Shakya family, who are sons and daughters of good family, who have no attachment to body, life, and property. If you have no attachment to body, life, and property, then why are you worried about meat? Who do not covet delicacies, are not at all greedy, who, being compassionate, desire to embrace all living beings as their own person, and who regard all beings with affection as if they were their only child. Long ago in the past, Mahamati, there lived a king whose name was Shimasaudasa. His excessive fondness for meat, his greed to be served with it, stimulated his taste for it to the highest degree, so that he even ate human flesh. In consequence of this, he was alienated from the society of his friends, counselors, kinsmen, relatives, not to speak of his own townsmen and countrymen. There it is again. It's not because the meat is bad. It's because of how, in his culture, he would be perceived as a lesser, as a threat. That guy eats humans. Holy shit, I'm not making friends with him. Of course. In consequence, he had to renounce his throne and dominion and to suffer great calamities because of his passion for meat. His passion, his desire, overrode his compassion for others. This is the central point, folks. Mahamati, even Indra, who obtained sovereignty over the gods, had once to assume the form of a hawk owing to his habit energy of eating meat for food in a previous existence. He then chased Vishvakarma, appearing in the guise of a pigeon, who had thus to place himself on the scale. This is all stories from Hinayana. This is all skillful means. This isn't actual. Right? I mean, unless you're abandoning Buddhism altogether, this is just fanciful storytelling. King Sivi, feeling pity for the innocent pigeon, had to sacrifice himself to the hawk and thus to suffer great pain. Even a god who became Indra the powerful after going through many births, Mahamati is liable to bring misfortune both upon himself and others, how much more those who are not Indra. This whole chapter is starting to sound like some, it's so outside the realm of everything else, Shakyamuni says, that this chapter would be the whole, that people would hinge their whole politic of veganism on this chapter. That's the danger of a bad translation. It doesn't say this crap anywhere else. Mahamati, there was another king who was carried away from his horse into a forest. After wandering about in it, he committed evil deeds with a lioness out of fear for his life, and children were born to her. He had sex with a lion? Can you not tell that this is just fanciful storytelling? Because of their descending from the union with a lioness, the royal children were called the Spotted Feet, etc. On account of their evil habit energy, in the past, when their food had been flesh, they ate meat even after becoming king. And Mahamati, in this life, they lived in a village called Kutaraka, or Seven Huts, and because they were excessively attached and devoted to meat eating, they gave birth to Dakas and Dakinis, who were terrible eaters of human flesh. In the life of transmigration, Mahamati, such ones will fall into the wombs of such excessive flesh-devouring creatures as the lion, tiger, panther, wolf, hyena, wild cat, jackal, owl, etc. Owls. They will fall into the womb of still more greedily flesh-devouring and still more terrible rakshasas. Falling into such, it will be with difficulty that they can ever obtain a human womb. How much more difficult attaining nirvana. Wow. I'm sorry I'm reading this, actually. This is certainly, as Suzuki said in the preface to this translation, that this was picked from an assemblage of Lanka texts coming from different sources, and this one obviously Hinayana, trying to identify and really, what was that show on Scared Straight? That's what this chapter is reminiscent of. A much earlier teaching that is trying to make the point that you live in a culture that abhors meat eating, that equates meat eating with all of these horrible stories, fables, cultural myths. And he's just, that's all he's spewing out here to try to make the argument that this is why you should refrain from eating meat. Don't stop, just refrain from eating meat. Consider who's watching, who you're with, and kowtow to their sensitivities so that you can become a good friend and lead them in Buddhism. That's what this is about. Now this, again, this is an argument I read a long time ago. Somebody was arguing with me about Buddhists don't eat meat. And I was trying to explain to him that's not the case, that you're misunderstanding the discussion on meat eating. And this is one of the statements that I recall reading before from some other chapter, or it may have been from the Lagavatana, specifically dealing with the karma of eating meat. It's not true, Mahamati, that meat is proper food and permissible for the Shravaka when the victim was not killed by himself. When he did not order others to kill it, or when it was not specifically meant for him. Listen to that. Read that very carefully. A Shravaka, obviously a student, a dedicated student of Buddhism. It's not proper for him to eat meat if he wasn't the one to kill it. Oh. He's allowed to murder an animal and eat it. That's okay. But if he didn't kill it himself, or if he didn't have somebody kill it for him, like go to your local butcher and say, will you be getting any lamb next week? Please cut me so many pounds and I'll come by and pick it up. See, that's specifically for me. I'm ordering from my butcher to get this meat for me. That's okay. And when it was not specifically meant for him. Remember my example of going to Brazil and they have a big feast and they say, here, enjoy this rib, these ribs, enjoy this prime rib. It was meant, it was prepared, it was killed and it prepared and served for him, the Shravaka. That's okay. Do you see? Again, Mahamati. There may be some unwitted people in the future time who, beginning to lead the homeless life, according to my teaching, are acknowledged as son of the Shakya and carry the Hashaya robe about them as a badge, but who are in thought evilly affected by erroneous reasonings. They may talk about various discriminations which they make in their moral discipline, being addicted to the view of a personal soul. Because there is no such thing, right? Anyway, I think you get it. Yeah, it goes on talking about, I've read all this before, forbidding the Shravakas, forbidding monks to eat meat. Again, you have to take this in context. This is in India, in a huge culture, right? Billions live in India, 1.2 at this point, so maybe it hadn't reached a billion 3,000 years ago, but a hugely populated and mythical culture. Of rampant deifications with profound cultural beliefs, right? So yeah, I forbid you from eating meat because anybody who sees you, even other Buddhists, are going to have these cultural stigmata. So better to just avoid it altogether. Totally understandable, yeah? In the canonical texts here and there, the process of discipline is developed in orderly sequence, like a ladder going up step by step and one joined to another in a regular and methodical manner. After explaining each point, meat obtained in these specific circumstances is not interdicted. Again, if you kill it, if you order someone to kill it, or if it is specifically dedicated to you, you can eat it. Shakyamuni himself was in this situation. I can't remember the sutra right now, but he was served meat and he ate it. So this is the part, thus, Mahamati, meat eating, I have not permitted to anyone, I do not permit, I will not permit, blah, 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 meat eating. I tell you, Mahamati, is not proper for homeless monks. What is he referring to here, homeless monks? That's a specific audience. Those are Hinayanas. Those are early sects that still believe in living in a monastery, divorcing themselves from society. That doesn't exist anymore. That's not the case anymore. We're bodhisattvas now. A bodhisattva must be in the society. It's the only way to be a bodhisattva. You can't be a bodhisattva and cage yourself up in a lonely place off in the hills. In which case, who gives a hell what you eat? This is a self-discipline observation of society. And these teachings he's identifying again is what he was keeping his monastery monks. Again, to identify their own cravings. Self-control. Yeah, now he's combining this with all the other self-control thing. This is all from early teachings. So it says, liquor, meat, onions, remember I mentioned onions, are to be avoided. Mahamati by the Bodhisattva Mahasattvas and those who are victor heroes. Meat is not agreeable to the wise. It has a nauseating odor. It causes a bad reputation. It is food for the carnivorous. I say this, Mahamati, it is not to be eaten. To those who eat meat, there are detrimental effects. To those who do not, merits. Mahamati, you should know that meat eaters bring detrimental effects upon themselves. Let the yogin refrain from eating, or the yogin, the mendicant, from eating flesh as it is born of himself, as the eating involves transgression, as flesh is produced of semen and blood, and as the killing of an animal causes terror to living beings. Always this context. Let the mendicant, or the practitioner, always refrain from eating meat, onions, various kinds of liquor, allium, and garlic. I've already mentioned those. This has closer ties to Ayurvedic thinking than Buddhism. Do not anoint the body with sesame oil. Do not sleep on a bed perforated with spikes. For the living beings who find their shelter in the cavities and in places where there are no cavities may be terribly frightened. Again, it's not about you, it's about your compassion for others. From eating meat, arrogance is born. From arrogance, erroneous imaginations issue. And from imagination is born greed. And for this reason, refrain from eating meat. Again, this is all relevant if you take it within context. It's not relevant today. It simply isn't. From imagination, greed is born. Yeah. And by greed, the mind is stupefied. There is attachment to stupefaction, and there is no emancipation from birth and death. For profit, sentient beings are destroyed. For flesh, money is paid out. They are both evildoers, and the deed matures in the hells called Raurava, or screaming. One who eats flesh, trespassing against the words of the Muni, Shakyamuni, the great sage, is evil-minded. He is pointing out in the teachings of the Shakya as the destroyer of the welfare of the two worlds. Those evildoers who do the most horrific or horrifying hell, meat eaters are matured in the terrific hells such as Raurava, etc. There is no meat to be regarded as pure in these ways, not premeditated, not asked for, and not impelled, therefore refrain from eating meat. Let not the practitioner eat meat. It is forbidden by myself as well as by the Buddhas. Those sentient beings who feed on one another will be reborn among the carnivorous animals. All right. this whole chapter has been quoted many times in those who wish to argue with me about meat eating. And I understand this chapter, but this chapter is from early teachings, and there are prohibitions meant for monks who are in monasteries, segmented from society, right? Who are accustomed to seeing monks walking the street with a begging bowl, who, by the way, if are offered meat, are okay to eat it, but they're not to be perceived by the people, general public in town, walking down the street chewing on a rib. That would scare the crap out of everyone, and then they would get no donations anymore. Nobody would want to support their monastery. See, that's a real situation. That's the context of this conversation. Not today, not Mahayana. So I have no idea why it's thrown into this Lankavatara here. It doesn't belong here. This is not Mahayana thinking. Mahayana is global. Hinayana, local. Do you see? Anyway, I suppose we had to read that, and different translations may not have that chapter. By the way, I was sent an email by somebody who was asking me on a video I did on was it Tendai? Who was asking me what text I was reading that from? Where did I get that? I welcome your questions. I like that you ask questions. Ooh, this went long. But try to be descriptive of your question. A question that says, where'd you get that from? It's kind of confrontational. What is your motivation? What is it that you really want to know? Do you want to know what the title of the book is so that you can get it and read it for yourself? I understand that. Or are you questioning me via material that I've shared? That's the kind of argument that's not productive. If you don't agree with something I've said, and so you're going to impugn whatever, I have sources I don't even, there's so much I've read and digested on Buddhism. I'm not simply here to read other people's opinions. I'm here to offer my own and insights into what other scholars have created, because in our practice of Lotus Sutra Buddhism, all of this feeds into that truth. And I may not be able to find the white paper or the... I've got almost 1,000 videos on this channel. I don't remember every single book, unless it's like Lotus lectures or this Lankavatara. I will know what book that I'm reading from, because I have many, many, many parts, right? Videos dedicated to that book. But occasional, unless you can direct me to... It's just a silly question. What book do you get that from? What are you wanting to know? What are you really asking? Develop your question. Otherwise, I don't know what... I have nothing to work with there, right? Anyway, thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. Like and subscribe. It's very important to grow this Sangha. Those of you who can go to the bookstore, you'll find a lot of answers there. As well as the threefoldlotus.com site. A lot of free information there. Just download it or look it up. And in the meantime, take care of your health. Be kind to yourself. Keep your practice strong. And I'll see you in the next one. All right? Thank you so much. Bye for now.